Madison Riachi. I'm a clinical and forensic psychologist and postdoctoral research fellow at the Center for Forensic Behavioral Science with Swinburne University. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which I'm coming to you today, which is the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I'll be joined by Caroline Hare, and she is located on Gadigal country. Today's episode is really focused on those that work in the legal profession to try and provide a more in-depth understanding of what is a forensic psychologist and what does hiring a forensic psychologist bring to the table, and how is it going to help you fulfill the role that you have. I would like to introduce Caroline. So Caroline trained and qualified as a forensic psychologist in the UK before relocating to Australia in 2012. After several years consulting with other Sydney-based practices, Caroline has set up her own private practice, primarily providing psychological reports to the courts and other decision-making bodies. Caroline was previously a supervisor at the UNSW Forensic Psychology Clinic. In 2019, Caroline commenced her PhD, focusing on the area of protective factors in desistance of male sexual offenders. Caroline was the most recent committee chair of the Australian Psychological Society College of Forensic Psychologists New South Wales branch.
So Caroline, thanks for joining us today to discuss on this episode, I guess, particularly geared at lawyers around who are forensic psychologists, what is forensic psychology, and how can forensic psychologists be of use to lawyers who wish to instruct a forensic psychologist for whatever assessment they might require. So I guess just to give some context around, well, what is forensic psychology?
Well, I guess the easiest way to describe forensic psychology in the briefest way possible is the intersection between psychology and the law. So it's where psychology meets the criminal justice system.
Wonderful. Feels very applicable for this group then. So I guess the other question that goes along with that is, do only forensic psychologists practice forensic psychology?
That's a great question, Maddie. And actually, no, any psychologist who is proficient to do so could operate within the field of forensic psychology. But when I say proficient to do so, what I'm talking about there is the training that people have received. So in Australia, to become a forensic psychologist, which is one of a number of different disciplines of psychology, you require advanced training. So that would be at a master's or doctoral level, specifically in forensic psychology. So you do your advanced training and then a long period of supervised practice. And that's how you can become eligible for an area of practice endorsement. And we're talking today about forensic psychology. But other psychologists can work within that discipline so long as they've gotten that training and knowledge from somewhere. And in order to remain current and registered as a forensic, as any type of psychologist, you must practice within your area of expertise. So to practice outside of your competence would lead to reprimands and potentially you not being able to practice anymore. So really it's up to the psychologist to ensure they have sufficient training, expertise, knowledge, skill to work in the area that they are choosing to work within.
Thanks, Caroline. And I guess, so you've mentioned around the qualifications that are required in Australia to be a forensic psychologist. I'm just wondering, how do those qualifications differ from other types of psychologists?
Yeah, so the core 8 competencies around any type of area of practice endorsement are the same. So in terms of you need knowledge of your discipline, ethical awareness, training and intervention. But what's different is for forensic psychologists, all of those 8 core competencies relate to forensic psychology. So the ethics of legal situations, practicing psychology within legal situations, that wouldn't be something that other areas of practice endorsement would specifically focus on. They would focus on however that plays out in their particular area of psychology. So there are similarities in terms of the level of skill needed, but the actual information knowledge is different. And particularly for forensic psychology, we're looking at models and theories of different types of criminal conduct. We're keeping up to date with research findings. We're making sure that our interventions are informed by the most contemporary research outcomes, that sort of thing. So that's how it's different. It's specific to forensic psychology and forensic psychology issues.
So, Caroline, what is it that a forensic psychologist actually does?
Okay, so I think the easiest way to explain this is to link it to the training that we have had. So forensic psychologists are thoroughly trained in the application of psychological risk assessments, including evidence-based for and against use of those measures. So you would be expecting a forensic psychologist to be aware of and able to outline the limitations of any of the methods they use. And then they should be offering opinions that are really soundly grounded in empirical research rather than gut-based opinions. That would be a big red flag for any kind of work where it's not linked to psychological theories of criminal conduct and such like. So forensic psychologists are able to provide robust case formulations that is linked to these theories and models. And then we use that formulation to inform treatment and management recommendations that are really consistent with contemporary principles of effective offender treatment and rehabilitation. And that's, in a nutshell, the key issues or key skills, I guess, that forensic psychologists bring to the table. Earlier you asked me, can other types of psychologists work in forensic psychology? You could find other psychologists working within those areas, but you would expect them to probably be supervised by a forensic psychologist, and you would expect them to have gained other training and expertise other than what their initial training was. Whereas with a forensic psychologist, they come out from their training with all of that knowledge and expertise kind of ready to go.
And I think something that maybe is flying around as a bit of a myth or a misconception is around diagnosis of mental illness. So as a forensic psychologist, can forensic psychologists actually diagnose mental illnesses?
Sure, that's a great question. So I think this is a common misperception, particularly within the courts, that you require a psychiatrist or a clinical psychologist to make a mental health diagnosis. That is not accurate. Any psychologist can diagnose mental illness, so long as that they are competent to do so. And when I talk about competency, it relates back to what I was talking about before. So long as they've undertaken the relevant training, and they can evidence their competence in that area, then they are able to make a diagnosis.
Thanks for clearing that one up, Caroline. I guess in terms of the services that forensic psychologists could provide that may actually assist lawyers in representing their clients, what kind of services could forensic psychologists offer for this population?
Well, I think the most relevant for lawyers is obviously going to be undertaking medico-legal assessments and presenting evidence in court. And that's a core component of training for forensic psychologists around both undertaking the assessment, but also how to present that evidence both in written and oral format. Forensic psychologists have been trained in court processes, procedures, etiquette, those kinds of areas. So that would probably be the primary service that forensic psychologists offer that lawyers would be interested in. Obviously, intervention as well. So often lawyers are keen to recommend that their clients engage in some kind of intervention whilst the criminal process is ongoing, they're awaiting sentencing. And again, forensic psychologists are trained specifically in interventions that address criminal conduct. So a forensic psychologist would be a good go-to in that circumstance.
And so why choose a forensic psychologist? If I was a lawyer, Why should I choose a forensic psychologist?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, as I said before, forensic psychologists have that core training in, I guess, all aspects, the risk assessment, the models and theories that underpin criminal conduct, the interventions that we would be making recommendations for in reports. So forensic psychologists already have that training as part of their core training. So again, I'm not saying that other psychologists, other disciplines of psychologists couldn't undertake that work, but they would have to show how they've undertaken the relevant training in addition to their core training. So it is not part of their core training. And many, there are many psychologists out there from other disciplines that have undertaken relevant training and gotten relevant experience and would be considered competent. But with a forensic psychologist, you know you're getting that, and you know you're getting that from the off.
I guess in terms of, say, once again, say I'm a lawyer, how would I actually check that someone is a forensic psychologist?
So if you go on the APRA website, so APRA is obviously the body that regulates all health practitioners in Australia, you can search for the person that you're perhaps intending to use by their name, their surname, and that will bring up information about their registration. And scrolling down, you can see the different areas of practice endorsement that they have against their name there. And so you would be looking for forensic amongst the areas of practice endorsement. Just going back again, that's not to say people without forensic practice endorsement wouldn't necessarily be competent. But I guess if I was the lawyer, I would be wanting to be sure that somebody I'm instructing who's not a forensic psychologist has got that relevant training and knowledge and expertise. And maybe that comes through word of mouth. You know, other lawyers have used that person, that person's gotten a good reputation within the courts and has undergone cross-examination and stood up well in terms of their qualifications. There's lots of ways people can, you know, present as appropriate to be used. But the easiest way for lawyers to ensure that those skills are there is just to have a look on the APRA website and check out areas of practice endorsement.
Okay, so I've gone on the APRA website as a lawyer and I've searched you up, Caroline, and I've said, great, she knows exactly what she's talking about. I want to instruct her. What information would be helpful for me to provide you as a lawyer if I was to instruct you as a forensic psychologist?
Well, obviously the letter of instruction will set out the specific questions that you're interested in being answered. At the very least, in terms of collateral information in a criminal matter, facts of the case and criminal history are important. That's interesting, is actually even if your client doesn't have any priors, it's important still to provide the official criminal history, particularly in certain cases where certain risk assessments are going to be used. It's important that the psychologist cites the criminal history directly rather than just being informed that there is none, because sometimes prior charges, even if they didn't result in convictions, can be important in reaching risk assessments. So that would be the bare minimum. Any information beyond that is helpful. I say any, within reason, useful information beyond that. So prior psychological reports, if they are in treatment, any kind of feedback from the treating psychologist, that doesn't need to be a formal report. It could just be an email with an update of treatment progress. Sometimes health history can be important. Sometimes information from other family members can be useful, particularly if it's an enduring condition that's been present since childhood. Often parents can provide really useful information around that. So really, I would recommend that the lawyer speak with the psychologist once the specific questions have been identified, and the psychologist might identify further information that would be useful to that specific case. It can be quite varied depending on what the questions are, what assessments are going to be applied, as to what would be most useful in each specific situation.
Mm-hmm. All right, perfect. Well, thanks, Caroline. Is there, I guess, having thought through our conversation, is there anything else that you would like to add or think is important to include?
I think it's important to acknowledge that there is a shortage of forensic psychologists. There are difficulties with becoming trained in forensic psychology. There's a limitation in the training available. So I think that's important to acknowledge, and that we're not promoting here that we can lawyers should only use forensic psychologists. I think what's the important message to get across is, if you can locate a forensic psychologist, they're going to have the training and experience, and that's a really sound place to go with your referral. If you can't locate a forensic psychologist, then it's super important that you do your background checking and to ensure that the person you're instructing has the relevant training and expertise and is operating within their competence. Otherwise, if it gets to cross examination in court, it could go, I guess, drastically wrong for a client, which would be really unfair for the client, given that they didn't have a say in who was instructed for them. So that's the main point to get across. The competence is key in this area. And some people who will put themselves forward for this work are completely competent and others are not. And so we can't just assume that everybody does have the competence.
Absolutely. Well, Caroline, thank you so much for joining us today. And we really appreciate you sharing your expertise and knowledge of the area of forensic psychology. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Maddie.